Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we have another show dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, God. God's on the menu tonight, usually is. And also a lot of other concepts related to science in general and to logic and certain kinds of what we'll call it, virtuous understandings that some people may or may not have. So tonight's show should be, a great show asking the question, God is on whose side? Okay. So some of you may already have some ideas about that, but I want to address this because it's something that's glossed over, and a lot of people try to ignore the very question, God is on whose side? Now, I'm not just talking about like things like wars or the obvious ones that come into play. I'm talking about people who say that God is on their side because they have a certain religion, or God is on their side because they have no religion, or there is no God, which will also be brought up and talked about tonight. Or there is a God, maybe, but God doesn't play favorites with anybody, and therefore it can't be on anyone's side, so what's the show about anyway? So at any rate, so those are the kinds of things that I thought we would talk about, that I will talk about, and you can do so as well if you want to call in. And if you're listening at a computer and you would prefer to listen on a telephone because you don't want to sit at the computer for the next couple hours, or you can't, just to let you know, if you dial 712-432-0075, you will and can hook up to this program and listen in on this show. Sometimes there's a little glitch and you may get thrown off the call. If you do, call back, because that happens. Based upon the technology as it is these days, it is not completely 100%. And also, if you are on your computer, I've been told that the first selection for hooking up is not the best one. That's the worst one. You want to be on one of the lower numbered ones that don't kick you off every so often or have bad sound or whatever. Something about the first kind, the first way of hooking up, is not really the most desirable, according to our engineer. So let me start off by saying that I'm going to present some arguments and some discussion that God does exist, and God is on the side of some, if we call them people. Some persons, and even some maybe parts of life, and against possibly certain other kinds of life. So that's what I'm going to present. So that may surprise you, because you may think, well, if you're so spiritual, why aren't you just like an egalitarian guy and say that God is just neutral or something like that? But I'm not suggesting that at all tonight. And let me say this. The best way to understand what I'm going to present is with this kind of concept, that the whole question, God is on whose side, is really a kind of smoke and mirrors trick. Because the fact of the matter is, it's not about whether God's on our side. It's about what side we ourselves are on and whether we're on God's side. So it's really an interesting point. And you might say, well, that sounds strange. How can you be on God's side and why does he need us? Well, that's the whole point of what I've said numerous times on various shows, that part of the reason that life exists is so that God can have growth. God created all of life so that life provides God with freedom to grow. Now, the way that God has freedom to grow is that it must exercise free will and give free will to the life that it creates. So, otherwise it would be circular and we'd just be in some kind of crazy puppet show where everything is still God doing everything and then it wouldn't make any sense. So, if you're following me, this is kind of a logic thing, okay? So, kind of try to stay with me on this. Just imagine you're God, and you've created this wonderful universe that's got all kinds of neat things in it, and you establish certain laws about non-life, things that aren't alive yet. It has to do with chemistry and physics, and it's really about the what a lot of people call natural laws, but those laws are really not so much about life, unless you want to extend them to life, but they're more about the physics and then chemistry of the universe. And it's about pre-life, I call it, things that aren't alive yet, but those laws affect it, things like gravity, electromagnetic forces, the strong and weak nuclear forces. These kinds of things are established by the thought or mind and mind of God, and they produce consistent results. So by God's standards, they do. By our standards, sometimes the consistency is a little troublesome. But we'll talk about that later in the show. Okay, so at any rate, this whole system was set up because God decided that a universe needs to be the way, in a structural way, the way it decided it to be, based upon mostly things to deal with energy. However, God decided that it wasn't going to think for anything that was alive, that could think for itself. And so that's where the difference lies in what I'm discussing. And again, why do I say that there is a God in comparison to a universe without a God? Why can't a universe have all of these laws and all the intricacies, et cetera, in it's a mathematical absolute positive definiteness that in order for all the things that happen exactly as they happen, including and especially the development of life as we know it here on Earth, I'm not talking about other places, in order for that all to take place, assuming, of course, this is an assumption based upon real numbers, that the universe is somewhere between 13.7 and 14 billion years old. Might be a little older than that. I think it could be, but there's various reasons to believe those numbers at the present time. There's not enough time. There hasn't been enough time in the universe for all the structures to have developed themselves, including life on Earth, and the very, very unique conditions under which life has been developed on Earth and Earth-like planets. There hasn't been enough time for life to develop to the level that we are at. If you use mathematical models that have checked this out, you need like 5 to 10 times more time. Not enough time. So there has to be something else in the equation. And what there is planning and thought that accelerates the process and changes it from just a random set of chaotic circumstances that would take a much, much longer period of time, under the very best of circumstances, like 5 to 10 times longer at a minimum, and some people are up at 100 to 1,000, but I'm taking the lowest numbers. So that's the first thing that tells us that, man, there must be a creator, because someone is doing something to make this thing go a lot faster. Then there's other reasons that there needs to be a creator. But I don't think I want to go into all those right now because I'm getting ahead of myself. I want to talk about assuming for right now that there is a God. Whose side is God on? And my suggestion is that in order to have God on your side, you've got to be on the side of God. And what does that mean? Well, God's side really is reflected in the mind of God. And so it's really interesting. The first two parts of God's mind is God's thought, which we call spirit. So if you're spiritual and you practice your life in a certain way, which we call the building of enlightenment or building of virtue in yourself and helping to do it in others and everything around you. If you do that, if your life is focused on creating virtue, doesn't mean you do it 100% of the time. I don't want you to think that. But the more that you do it in comparison, okay, you ready for this? In comparison to your ability to do it, which includes your consciousness and your senses and your overall ability to create light in form, virtue, the more, in comparison, if you compare the two, how much have you done and how much are you capable of? And you average that into it, then the results are that those who have higher numbers, higher percentages of creating virtue in comparison to their level of capability of doing so, have God more on their side. Or, to put it in the correct way, they are more on God's side. And that changes everything because the universe is not neutral. A lot of people would like to think that it is, particularly people who aren't particularly virtuous and maybe don't believe in the Creator. But that's rather problematic, as I already suggested, and we'll go more into it later. But so when we're looking at this thing, we can see, as far as by this very simple, I think it is simple, but I hope you're following it, definition, which I usually like to start our shows with, that we can determine whose side God is on by determining who is on God's side. See when I said the smoke and mirror question. Who is on God's side? And we know who's on God's side by comparing their level of consciousness and their general senses, quality of sense, and their overall ability, includes their education and everything, the whole background, in comparison to how much virtue they are creating on a daily, moment to moment, however way you want to measure it, basis. I mean, we can measure it over a month, a year, it doesn't matter. That determines the amount that God is on their side compared to others. Now you can say, well, are there any absolutes in this thing? Is it like, if you create virtue to this level, then blah, blah, blah. Kind of there is. And that's going to shock you too, because you're going to probably say, well, it sounds like he's maybe prejudiced or something. You know, maybe he thinks only certain kind of people deserve God's, you know. And the interesting part about this is that it has to do with time. It's a very strange thing. When God set up the universe, God apparently was asking itself the same question. How much should I help out those who are really screw-ups and who are not very virtuous? And the interesting part about this is God said, I'm going to create this thing called time-space. And the more that people screw up because they don't use what they have, their capabilities, to create much virtue, the longer period of time they're going to have before the consequences of their screw-ups fully engulf them. And that's what God decided, giving them a thing we call, a lot of people call, grace. In other words, this is like God saying, okay, I know you're a screw-up. I know that you guys are going to do some terrible things. And I know that you've come to the world that you're in, which is, in this case, our physical world at the present time, from a soul which has a really high level of consciousness. But you are suffering from this loss of consciousness, and it is suffering. You've chosen to go and live, be a human in a terrible place, a physical planet, with the dire consequences of high levels of forces against us, and a very short life expectancy that usually ends with a lot of suffering and other bad things. And we also have to experience this with all the people around us, our friends, our families, even our enemies. So all of this is going on. And God said, well, you know, got to give them credit even if they don't do very well. So I'm, if I can so say it as God, I'm going to give grace. I'm going to allow those people to have a lot longer time to correct some of this really unvirtuous, very dark in some cases, the worst is evil, kinds of behaviors without them getting a severe response from the laws of the universe, because I'm going to separate time from space from them so much, because I'm going to have the forces they create through their lack of virtue to cause the separation in time and space, and the result will be, in something we call karma, that they will not experience the negative results nearly as fast as those that are doing the right things, but may occasionally slip up. Because if they did experience them, and God must have contemplated this and come to this conclusion, too many would be completely obliterated by their own selfishness too quickly, before they could learn, before they could adjust, before others could save them, before God could save them. And we'd be on a declining balance in terms of those that live in a spiritual, virtuous way. It would not give them a chance to move ahead. Wow. Didn't know that, he said. Okay. And how do I know that? Well, it has to do with the physics issues. It so happens there's a lot of proof to what I'm saying in terms of certain kinds of physics. And I know I don't want to get too far into physics tonight, but let's just say that it's virtually a foregone conclusion that time separates from space and things literally slow down for those who are, quote-unquote, making mistakes. And if you conclude, as I conclude, using logic and moral, ethical thought, that those who choose to be selfish and are negative in their amounts of creation of virtue are actually making some bad mistakes, at the least, we would call it that. Those mistakes separate time from space. By definition, they do. Now, I can go further into that, but we'd have to have a whole show on it. And so, if you really want to know a lot more about it, you could go to the textbook I wrote, Life's Meaning. I'm not saying it's all you can sell books. I'm just telling you that it's in there. And you can read the chapter 10 on time and space. Time and space in there. It will explain it better. But right now, let's just say that that's as close as I can come within the time allotted to explain that particular concept. It's not complete, I understand. All right, so this is fascinating. God is on the side of those who choose to be on God's side based upon their overall ability to do so. But God is also on the side for those who are not, through a thing we call grace, which is part of this time-space issue. And it's absolutely fascinating that those who may be the worst offenders of creation of virtue, of spiritual thought itself, have actually the greatest amount of time before the forces which grow out of their terrible mistakes, so-called, come to bear on them. They have a lot of time. It could be lifetimes in a physical sense. That gives them a lot of time to change. This is a beautiful model. I love it. I absolutely love this model. Now, you may have heard me tell you pieces before, but I'm not sure that I've said it exactly this way as I have tonight. And you'd have to listen to all my shows, probably, to put this thing together before this. So hopefully tonight it really gets it together for people. Okay, well, that's wonderful, but what about the folks who are trying to do their best and are sometimes succeeding and other times failing? Do they get any kind of help from God? Well, yeah, because let's say that you're using your senses, you're using your thought and knowledge and ability to learn and change, and you're using your consciousness, the most important thing, to create virtue, and let's say you're doing it 5% of the time. Doesn't sound like a big number, does it? I know. But it's, remember, this is in comparison to what others are doing as well, and in comparison to what you're capable of. So it's 5% of what you're capable of, and if your capability is like triple that, 15%, and you're doing 5%, then you're probably a bit worse than the average. Because if we look at society in general, and depends on the country and certain other issues, the more developed countries where people are well enough educated and have sort of advantages, they might be at a couple percent. But their capability might only be at 4 or 5%. And so they are not as deficient in their creations than someone who is at 5%, but has a capability of 15%. Can you see that? It's kind of a little mathematical model. So it's in comparison to how much you can do and those around you are doing. So those people become like, even though they're creating more virtue than the average people, they are doing so at less than the same percentage average that others are doing of the whole society. And that's not a good thing, because that number is the main number. That's it. And then they have accelerated karma. And the accelerated karma comes in because their capabilities are relatively high. They have lots of cues from those around them, and they're causing more harm to other people because, on a relative scale, they are not creating as much virtue as the averages in society, even though they have a greater ability on a singular level. This is a little bit complicated. I told you there's certain kinds of thinking and reasoning you have to do with this. It's not as simple as, you know, just, well, you get 5 demerits for this and 10 for that, and you average that. Because it's relative. It's relative. And you have to conclude and look at the relative issues. This then explains why some people seem to have a lot of terrible things going on with them, when they seem to be really good people. I mean, let's say someone could create virtue 20% of the time. That's a very big number, by the way. That would be someone who is significantly spiritually disciplining themselves. And they're doing a lot of good things. However, if their capability were to be at 60% and they were only functioning at 20, they would be, instead of a regular spiritual disciple, they'd be a failing or failed spiritual disciple, because they're not anywhere near their capabilities, and they're below the capabilities of those around them that are only working at a couple percent. Because the relative amounts are what matters to God. And I'm going to explain why in a minute, but the relative amounts are what matters. There are no absolute numbers. So God is not on your side because you're doing 20%, or you're doing 30%, you're doing 40% of creating virtue. But what could you be doing? And what are you doing is the bigger question. Okay. Now you're going to say, all right, how come it's like that? That doesn't sound fair still. I don't like that idea. Well, you see, the growth of God is dependent upon the growth of life. The more someone is not using their capabilities, regardless of how much virtue they're actually creating, the slower they're growing. They may even be negatively growing. And it happens. And that is a retardant to all life and to God itself. So God's not on your side if that's what you're doing. If you understand me. Because you're not really on God's side. God's side is you get as close to your capabilities as you can, as often as possible. You live at this maximum level as much as possible. And when you do so, then you're on God's side and God's on yours. That's how you do it. You go the other way, you become a retardant to the development of consciousness of all the other life around you, especially other human beings, and you create a negative effect on the world you live in. And a negative effect on the Creator, who is going through this joyous, wonderful experience of growth. But despite the fact that you are helping it grow, you're not helping the Creator grow in the way it seeks to grow. It seeks to grow in that life is helping all other life to do the same thing, and you're retarding other life from doing it because of the choices, which are really quite selfish, more than you may care to realize, if you have great capabilities and you're doing little with them. Does this all make sense? I know this is complicated. I told you it's going to be somewhat logic-induced tonight. You got a guy, you know, the first part of the show is going to be about trying to think your way through this. There's a lot of logic about it. I'm trying to help you to think the way I believe God thinks. This is difficult. A lot of people say, well, how could you know how God thinks? Well, maybe I don't. This is all about challenging people to think themselves. And if you disagree, that's okay, but come up with a better idea. You know, if you really got a better idea, I would love to know it because, you know, I want to be able to both teach and live in a way which is as close to God as possible. So understanding and living as close to God as possible is what I'm trying to do and trying to share my experiences and understandings about this with all of you out there. Okay, so I hope that you've followed this so far. I know this is somewhat difficult, and it's a challenge to think this way. But also, if you can get it, it really changes your life. Because now you have different standards that I think are more valuable and more important. It makes everyone's life, in my opinion now, more valuable and meaningful to follow what I just explained in the first 30 minutes of the show, than anything else I know of. And this model, in particular, explains almost everything that most people find contradictory or confusing if there is a God. Because they see certain things that seem to be unfair. They've experienced things in themselves that sometimes are unfair. You could imagine. I mean, the average person, or even above average person, and particularly above average people, average in the sense of creating virtue now, people are saying, well, I'm pretty virtuous. You know, I'm doing this and that, and I'm really giving in this way and that, and I'm trying to help others sometimes to do the same. But they don't recognize their own capabilities, and they don't take that into account. And they may compare themselves to others around them who have far less capabilities and see their life is not going well while these other people's lives are going just fine. And then my question is, God's on their side. And what's really wrong with their equation? And what's wrong is what I covered. They didn't understand that. Once you understand it, you begin to change perspective and realize that this is not a sum total. It's a relative issue. It's about growth. And it's about helping others to grow at the same time. It's not about a goal of doing something. And say, well, I'm done. I did it. I created this bunch of virtues today. I can go take it easy, screw off, do anything, because I'm done. That's exactly the kind of thing that will get you a lot of trouble. That kind of thinking and behavior. A lot of trouble. And some people actually do that. I have heard so many times people say, oh, I've been so good this week. I can go out and really screw up. And I got everything all figured out. So, you know, it doesn't matter. Well, good luck. Because remember, two things happen. Not only are you not following God's plan, but in those circumstances, the karma comes much faster to those who are more capable and don't use their capabilities. That's a worse, because the speed is so much faster. God said, you know, I'm going to give grace to those who are kind of not doing very well. But someone who could do well and even knows to do well, do good, and says, well, I've done enough for right now. I think I'm going to go screw off. I'm going to let the karma go much faster for them. Sort of like a non-grace or an ungraced situation. No grace for those. Holy cow. So not only do you get the bad part of the system, because God's on your side, but you get it a lot faster with a much greater level of force. So when things go bad, they go really bad. For those who are capable and are not using their abilities to do so. Go really bad for them. Very fast. Some exceptions to this, and I want to talk about them. Some people have decided that they want to knowingly destroy God, and or they try to argue to others that there is no God, and they are just a blatantly evil people. Okay. Either way, if a person chooses evil, they may have, at the initial beginning of the process, considerably greater abilities to create God. But because they have chosen to negate God, just simply say, I don't want to be like God at all, period, God does not accelerate their karma either. You might say, why not? Okay, we can give grace to people, you know, but you know what? Why give grace to the evil turkeys? I'd hit them over the head with a hammer or something, you know, give them a hard time. But once they really become very evil, I'm not talking about people who are dark. I'm not talking about necessarily even people who are criminals. Matter of fact, a lot of criminals are not necessarily evil yet. They're on their way, but they're not there yet. Depends who we're talking about. So, some criminals might get grace. It's possible. But a lot of criminals might get accelerated karma, if they're not too far criminal, to get them to change. But people who are evil, God lets go. Why? Because once someone has consciously decided to negate God, and to fight God, to exclude God from their life in every possible way. I'm not talking about God as a thought. I'm talking about God as a way of life, virtue. They try to get rid of virtue. So instead of God, I should just say they're trying to get rid of virtue. They're trying to be as bad as they can be. Okay. Evil. They want to have power and control over all others. They want to do so with harm being one of their main weapons to use, and whatever, and fear, etc. These people, God does not accelerate the come up. Because God still wants free will to exist in life as a general principle. And once someone has chosen evil, you can't force them to think differently. They have to come to the conclusions of the evil themselves being wrong, which could take a very, 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 very long time. And because of this absolute, we'll say, dictate of our Creator, that you don't change those that are evil by forcing them to think differently, then they don't have accelerated karma. And they could live for many lifetimes doing evil. Eventually, it does come. But that's because of the physics issues, not because God's doing anything out of the ordinary. So the more that God is ignored, the more God literally does the ignoring and doesn't do anything good or bad. It just allows those to experience their own evil until such time as it just doesn't work for them anymore. Eventually it doesn't, because their consciousness is in a very, very slight, slow way, declining no matter what else they do, no matter how much they take from others. They're still losing. And in the long run, their life will be as close to hell as we could imagine, but there's really not anything exactly like hell, because even they will have the opportunity to turn themselves around. It might take millions of years of pure torture, but... And not torture where someone's doing something to them. It's where they put themselves in the process. Just so you understand. Okay, at this point, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'll go into other ideas and thoughts about this. Hopefully, this kind of has built a little foundation for us. So when we come back, the rest of what I tell you about will make even more sense, and we'll get into some nuts and bolts issues about, is God on whose side? We're going to talk about this in terms of religion and many other things. And we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart. ¶¶
we're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about, is God on whose side? Or God is on whose side? That's the question. In case you missed the first part of the show, it's going to be kind of a little bit difficult to understand some of the other things I'm going to say, but stay with us. You may still get it. Let me say this, that those really big ideas and thoughts that I said at the beginning, the reason they're important is because they answer questions, they're concepts, and they answer questions that are almost not answered anyplace else. So some of the stuff I'm going to talk about in the rest of the show would be confusing, I think, to some people if they don't have these concepts in mind. So just try to think about what I've said in comparison to what I'm going to say now so that it kind of fits together for you. Because I really don't have time to go back over another 40 minutes and explain the same concepts over again. We'll never get through the show. Okay. God is on whose side? Let's talk about religions, because this is a big issue. There are people who are atheists. There are people who are agnostic. Agnostic means they kind of doubt. They don't know for sure if God exists. They're kind of open to it, but they're not closed, but they're not sure. And then there are those who are devoutly religious, but about a certain kind of religion that they belong to. Now, many people believe that their religion, now this may not even be a majority, but many people believe this, that those people who are in any way significantly different in their religious beliefs from themselves are not going to be as thought as well of by God. Some people believe that God will condemn them, and some people believe that they should condemn others who don't believe in the way they believe about God. Now, how does that fit into what I earlier explained? And this is going to be a little touchy, possibly some political problems here, but this is the way it fits in. Let's talk about it. Those people who are completely open-minded, they may follow or practice a certain religion, but say, hey, every other religion is just as cool as moon. Everybody that is in a religion is fine. And people who are not into religions, that's okay too, because they are not without God. Because I believe in God, or we believe in God. For the people who don't believe in God, that's okay too, because we believe in God enough to maybe pull our share of whatever needs to be done in terms of being on God's side. And yet, we also recognize, I'm making this a general case, we also recognize that those who don't believe in God at all might be very good people and create godly things, even though they don't believe in God. And if they live a godly life, then by definition, God's on their side because they're on God's side. God's side is to grow more of God by creating virtue. Now you might say, well, what about this business where you've talked about me, you know, Niles, where you've talked about, gaining an understanding of God and gaining an understanding of how to create more of God. Well, if you can create virtue, you've done that. You may not have a name for it. Some people cannot yet get the business about the Creator being part of the equation. They don't have enough scientific understanding. They don't have enough certain kinds of spiritual trainings. To them, that doesn't quite gel for them. But they still live their life by co-creating with their Creator, even if they don't recognize it. And it's possible to do this. Now, for some people, it's very difficult to believe that. Some people believe, well, if you don't believe in God at all, then you're really in bad shape. Those people that feel and think that way are going to have a hard time to have God on their side. Why? Because they are negating possibly people who are relatively more conscious than they are. And they're hampering those people in their growth, besides hampering their own. And they may have some bad things take place to them. This is a complicated thing, isn't it? Okay. What about the people who want to go out and have a jihad? Kill the infidels because they're not practicing our religion, and convert or die. I think that's part of the saying. That has two elements to it. The first is those who have limited capacity to understand and do better, and hold that because it's part of a culture that they have been brought up in. They live in Gaza. They've had almost no education. They've been constantly brainwashed into this believing this system. And they've been abused by the environment in which they exist in. And they have an enemy that they think is trying to harm them. Maybe not true, but they believe it to be true. Okay, so all of that together causes them to have this structure of thought. Structure of thought is dark. It's obviously not virtuous. However, it doesn't mean that necessarily they are without grace. It's possible, depending upon how they live in other ways in their life, if they're up to their capacities or not, or if they're closer. So there is a possibility that someone, even in that situation, may not suffer dire consequences and may be given some level of grace. Depending upon their relative issues, they may actually, though, have a very tough life because they may have very fast karma if they are more capable, but they still hold these thoughts. And what about the people who are doing the killing and who are actively involved in these hideous crimes? And they say, well, I'm going to heaven. I'm going to have 71, 2, whatever it is, virgins, and I'm going to have this and that and all this stuff because God is really on my side, etc. We call them fanatics. But the problem they encounter is that the act of destroying life itself is evil. So now they've crossed over into the evil territory. And what did I say earlier? God just ignores them. And you might say, well, is that such a good idea? I mean, why doesn't God come down and hit them with a lightning bolt or something, get rid of them and kill them all, you know? Well, remember that edict of totally important that free will still be allowed, that free thinking, even if it's totally antagonistic to the very existence of God's beings. It's why evil has to be allowed to happen. So what happens in that kind of situation? How do we deal with people like that, because God isn't going to necessarily do something about it, because God has its own creative structure which would prohibit itself from doing that. So what is the answer to this situation? And the answer is, and some of you are not going to like this answer, that those people have to be in the physical world where we are right now. I'm not talking about the astral and other places. I'll get to that in a minute. But for right now, those of us who are physically alive have to fight these people, and we have to constrain them, restrain them, or kill them. Those are the appropriate things to be done because these people are going to do the same or worse to others, including us, if we don't. And evil in the physical world needs to be fought against using the force that God refuses to use against evil. It has to be done by those who have heroic abilities and are willing to make sacrifices, including their own life, to fight this sort of evil and other kinds of evil as well. And the reason you've got to do it is not because you may think that, well, I'm a pacifist, I'm a peaceful person, I don't want to fight anybody. But you have to do it because God's not going to, based upon my explanations before. I know that's a bitter part of understanding. It's very difficult for some people to do so. I remember I was reading this similar scenario in books by a woman who was writing some words from an advanced being. Her name was Alice Bailey. And she was writing the same exact thing I just told you, that you have to fight even if you don't want to. This had to do with World War II, but it doesn't really matter. You're fighting evil, you're fighting evil. And once you reach the point of evil, you don't have a choice that is virtuous unless you're willing to fight. All the other choices are less than virtuous. Now, does that mean you get terrible consequences? Well, some people will. If you have high capabilities and you choose not to fight, you know, you're going to have some real bad situations occur. And if you have the capability and you squander that capability, even if you say, well, I'm kind of fighting, but you're not really trying or really not doing much, the consequences can be pretty serious because it invites the evil in. God's not going to help you against the evil, and you become a target, but yet you're not using what you're capable of doing, so some very nasty things can happen. Now, again, I want to just remind you, God is not doing this because God is a bad God. But God is doing this because to guarantee the sanctity of life growing itself and God, and life being self-created, that sanctity, which is like a very, very important sanctity, it's the freedom and creation that I talk about as being the first part of God's mind, which is so critical. In order to maintain that, God cannot come in and just smitten the evil and get rid of it. Can't do it. It's up to us. It's up to people. We are the ones who are aware of evil. It's true that souls are aware of evil too. They understand the principles. But people are the foot soldiers that need to do the fighting. Now, am I a warmonger? No. I deplore war. I think that war is the most insane thing on the planet. But if others are going to make war on you, and if they're going to try to kill you, be aware that you can pray all you want. You can pray for them. If they are, in fact, evil, it will do no good because they don't care about your prayers. The more you pray, the more they want to kill you because you're praying to the wrong God. But they will not be stopped, like the rest of us, by God. They will not be. So it's up to us or bad things happen. Okay? I know, tough one. There's more. I'm going to tell you a lot more tonight's show. It's not all this doom and gloom, but there's a lot of things to think about and a lot of things that people don't understand about all this. I'm hoping tonight's show can really kind of like open it up and get people to the point where they can say, well, you know, I was listening to a guy enough for radio, and I finally figured out some things about evil and God and why things are the way they are and everything, and why God can be on someone's side and not on others, and it kind of makes sense now. That would be great if this does this for you. If it is of any help in that direction, I'll be delighted. Okay. Well, we just mentioned, I'm just talking about a specific thing about religion. What about all the other, you know, compounded crazy things? I mean, the tremendous number of people who have been in conflict over religion. What does this mean in terms of all of us, for all of us? And how does God deal with all of us, if at all? Well, with evil, God is ignores. But with the rest of us who, let's assume, are not at the evil stage, we're not going out and saying, okay, got to go kill 1,000 people today because it's jihad time. For the rest of us, there is continuous forces. And those forces are to reverse most of the prejudices. Now, some of the forces happen because the people who we take to be the leaders in the various churches and synagogues, etc., and mosques, that we may go to, are just plain uninformed, unaware, and they're not good teachers. They certainly don't seem to understand the things I'm talking about. So what do we do? My first suggestion is this. Listen to the show over several times and challenge any teacher, priest, whatever they call themselves, about these ideas in comparison to what they're saying. If they can't come up with a rational, reasonable explanation for why they are being prejudicial against other religions, even sects of the same religion, then leave. The best thing you can do is to not participate and get others to leave as well. You can say, well, I don't want to affect anyone else because I just want to, you know, I don't want to be a troublemaker and everything. No, we are here to share our consciousness, if it is really higher than others, with others. I mean, that's the reason we're here. Now, if they can convince us otherwise, that's fine. Have a dialogue. But the reason you want to get away from those religions is their power, and their ability to influence other people is based upon the attendance of people. And as that attendance drops, it puts pressure, forces, onto those who are selling these prejudicial thoughts to their parishioners, etc. And it will force them to reduce the level that they're doing it because there won't be as many people coming. And eventually there may be no people coming. And that's a good thing. So I'm suggesting here a plan of action. As I said right before the break, a plan of action is to just leave and take as many of the people with you by explaining some of the concepts that we're talking about tonight. That's a good thing. I'm not against religions. I'm against prejudice. Follow me? And you could use the same argument. Now, what about the sects that are just permeated? There are no other places to go if you're going to be in that kind of thought process. Well, you got one of two choices. You can find a different kind of religion. That's choice number one. Choice number two is start your own. That expounds or propounds or explains things in a much better way than the present one. Maybe you started with a group of others. Maybe you're not the preaching type, but you find somebody who is, who still follows these ideas that are much less prejudicial. The thing is that prejudice is rampant in some religious sects. It's disgusting, too, because these people that are supposedly the leaders, the preachers, or whatever they are defying and defiling God itself when they should be, of course, trying to get people to find the Creator in themselves and in the world around them. And it could be the very reason that many people are agnostic and some people are atheist, if you think about it, because they've experienced this and they say to themselves, well, I'd rather not be involved with a God if this is what God is, you know, a bunch of prejudiced people who hate everybody except themselves, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Okay. What about countries? Let's switch gears. Well, you know, before I do that, I'm going to give you all a little bit of a break here, just a few minutes, cool off your head. Before I jump into another subject, I wanted to mention that you probably all know, if you've listened to the show before, that we've got Phi Chi Jesus available. And it seems to work on most people. As I mentioned, there's going to be a few won't work on. We had a couple people try it. It came about because one person gave it to somebody else, but we had a couple of people try it who were addicted to some very hard, strong drugs. Not addicted in the sense that to an illegal substance for them because they were being prescribed it, but nonetheless addicted. If you're addicted to a narcotic, Phi Chi Jesus is not designed to be a withdrawal antidote to narcotics. So it's not going to, it's like you can't say, well, gee, I'm taking narcotic because I've been paying, but I'm also addicted to it. So if I stop taking narcotic, can I just switch to Phi Chi Jesus? And the answer is no, you cannot, because you're going to go through some pretty severe withdrawals. And the withdrawal partly is the very pain the person originally felt. The withdrawal symptoms has to do with demonic energies in the nervous system or nervous system. And these demonic energies have been numbed. Well, when you take away the numbingness, which is caused by the narcotic, they go on full alert. And they say, oh, I'm up, hey, I'm here. Oh, my, I've been out for months, and oh, there's all kinds of things not going right. And they immediately put on the alarm bells. And the person experiences worse pain than they may have ever experienced, as soon as they go into the slightest level of withdrawal. And as it gets worse, it may be worse pain than ever. Phi Chi Jesus can't deal with that. I mean, that's not what it was designed for. And it is possible that if a person goes through the withdrawals and gradually increases the amount of Phi Chi Jesus they use, they may shorten over time the amount of withdrawal time and some of the pain. But it still could be weeks before that's going to happen. So taking it one or two times is not going to change anything. So just so people understand that this is a wonderful, wonderful herbal supplement, which is amazing. It's very strong, but it's not made to act as a withdrawal drug. That's something that they have specific drugs for. They sometimes use these drugs to reduce the effects of the narcotics in the withdrawal stage. And those are the appropriate things to do. A person should probably go through this in a very controlled setting where doctors who are used to doing this sort of thing are on hand. Withdrawals can actually kill some people. Narcotics and barbiturates, if you suddenly stop taking them, can actually kill you because your body is so dependent upon them that when you stop taking them, systems stop working that have to work in order to stay alive. I just thought I'd throw that in there. It's only happened a couple times so far. I imagine in the future, though, we're going to, you know, on a regular basis, someone's going to try this. It just isn't going to work. I can tell you, it won't work on a regular basis. But for the rest of us, who hopefully are not addicted to narcotics and, you know, taking like 50 pills a day or whatever, this is a great product. And if you haven't tried it, you should. Absolutely. You can call us. Well, at least the people who are selling it. And it's buyjizik.com. And now I can tell you finally, you can get Soul Balance, Ideal Cell Absorption, Resveratrol for both adults and pets, all from just calling this number. Are you ready? Okay, here it comes. 602-431-5762. Let's say it again. 602-431-5762. By the way, you can get a trial size of Phygesic. It only lasts a day or two, a couple of days, if you had a really severe pain. But if you really want to know, it's like $20. If it doesn't work, you get your money back. Or if you buy the regular 100-count bottle, you can do that too. And if it doesn't work for that one bottle, you get your money back. And you can't buy 50 bottles. They say, well, I want my money back for all 50 bottles. And I use all 50 bottles, so thank you very much. Now, you get one try. If it really doesn't work for you, let us know. Immediately get your money back. We don't, no hassles. It's to your satisfaction that it works. You don't have to say, well, do I have to have somebody approve it? No, you don't have to have anything. That's the reason we believe in this stuff. It really works. Now, we don't say it works for every human being on the planet. There's going to be a few people for some kinds of pain that it may not work for. That's okay. They may want to still keep it because it works for other kinds of pains, but there's some people it may not work on at all, honestly. And there's going to be, you know, some small segment of the population. That's true. That's okay. Send it back. Don't worry about it. We still love you. Okay. No problem. Okay. All right. Let's get back to this question about countries now. This is another thing. Most countries, when they decide, well, I'm going to war, or I'm going to invade, or I'm going to do this to my internal population, insurrection, or whatever, God's on their side. It doesn't matter if they're the most evil, like the Nazis and the Mussolini Italians, and not the Italians per se, but the people who are in the Mussolini's inner party group of fascists, or, you know, people like who were staunch communists in the Soviet Union and many of the satellite countries. So God's on our side. Less so, by the way, in the Soviet Union, because they didn't believe much in God. But some people did. God's on our side. Okay. If God's on your side and you think it's a just cause, then you believe that God's going to help you out, right? I mean, God's on your side. But remember I told you about the smoke and mirror business. It's really how much are you on God's side? Are you fighting for God, or are you fighting for some country-wide purpose or issue? This is the big problem. With religion, you really are talking about fighting about God. But in a lot of wars between countries, that's not the case. They're fighting about, many times, resources and land and control of populations of people. While other countries may be fighting for the virtues of God, like freedom, free enterprise, love, helping and being charitable to all, and being of a neutral, unprejudiced source for all. According to what I suggested during the first part of the show, God is probably on very few countries' side, because those countries that fight for some material reason are most of the time not fighting for virtue. It's those countries that have fought for virtue that have had the blessings of their Creator and the help of their Creator. Now you might say, well, wait a second. Does that mean that the average consciousness of the country is what counts? And that answer is yes. When we're talking about countries, we're no longer talking about individuals. We're talking about what is the consciousness, the amount of the first two parts of God's mind, that the country is has a spiritual foundation. The amount that that country has a spiritual foundation in comparison to the other country that is in some way being provocative and destructive, God is on the side of those who are on its side, on God's side. In the past, if we look at some of the quote-unquote wars, I'm going to use the United States because I'm speaking from the United States. I know we have lots of listeners all over the world, but I'm going to use the United States. The United States, during World War II, fought virtuously because it was fighting for freedom and for liberty to survive within principles of democracy, and also it was fighting for equal rights and for a non-prejudicial way of living. Now, you could say, but it still took 4 years, and the United States suffered a lot. Why didn't it do much better? Well, then you have to look at the other side of the fence. The United States, for 2 years, almost three, stayed out of World War II. And with great reluctance, right before it went in 1940, it started to actually supply England, Great Britain, and make some differences in that respect. But it still tried to, quote-unquote, be neutral when, using the principles that I suggested, evil was about. Fascism was evil. Whether it was Japanese style, Italian style, Spanish style, although they weren't directly in war, or German style. And then when there wasn't fascism, there was communism. You say, well, we aligned ourselves with the communists. Yeah, and we ended up with the Cold War because we didn't handle that situation correctly. But let's start at the beginning of the war. Beginning of the war in World War II, and this is a good example. The United States could have been much more proactive. If we had been more proactive, there would not have been a Pearl Harbor. We would have lost a fraction of the number of fighting people in the war that were Americans. We would have saved other countries from losing as many. And we would have been proactive about the prejudices against Jews and gypsies and homosexuals in Germany that were being mass murdered. And we knew about it. People said, oh, we didn't know. That's just bullshit. We didn't know. Read the history books. We knew. We chose not to listen. It wasn't our fight. Even when we were in the war, it wasn't our fight. We turned back ships of Jews coming into Florida and other places because we didn't want to muddy our country with problems from Europe, and we were anti-Semitic. So, I mean, when you look at this, we're lucky it only took 4 years. Really. And we did end up with the Cold War afterwards with the Soviet Union because we totally mishandled it. Because Roosevelt was actually a progressive president who believed in some of the dictatorial elements of Stalin. Now, he didn't much like Hitler, but he did like, apparently, Mussolini and Stalin. I know he was fighting Mussolini, but we pretty much whipped the Italians by the time he and Stalin were really trying to find a common ground to work under. But amazingly, he was prejudiced against freedom himself. There were some prejudices that he had that were significant. He thought the government should take care of people and do what this country was founded against. So we had some things going counterproductive. Now, did he really believe that the Germans and fascism itself in general was evil? Yes. And was he willing to fight that sort of thing? Yes. But that didn't mean that he completely bought idea of a free society. And so we had contradictory kinds of leadership and thought that led to a Cold War. Now, how did that happen? Well, remember, God's out of us because there was evil involved. And Stalin was at least as evil. It's always Mao in the Chinese situation. The whole thing was ignored because the abilities in consciousness and awareness and with all of the intelligence we had and all the other things, we chose to not take action on. We had tremendous opportunities to turn back the Soviets and keep them out of influencing what was happening in China. There would not have been a Red China. But we didn't do the right thing. First of all, we're backing kind of the wrong guy. This guy, Shek was really he called himself a Republican kind of Chinese leader, but he really wasn't. He was just another opportunist. We needed to become more interested and involved in establishing a truly free democratic society in China and prevent the Soviet Union from infiltrating with their ideas their cause for the advancement of communism. Same thing is true in North Korea. So what took place? Well, we managed to keep them out, the Soviet Union, mostly out of Japan, because they also want to try to take over Japan. But we didn't keep them out of North Korea or China. And so what happened is we had a major problem with Koreans and North Koreans, which lasts until today. We lost 55,000 people killed in North Korea. Then the Red Chinese came in and whipped us, and then we couldn't go on fighting. And we allowed Red China to become what it is today, a great menace. And in addition to that, we then had to contend with the nuclear weapons armament race with the Soviet Union. We didn't even, because we tried to ignore so many virtuous principles, we didn't even realize that they were stealing all our secrets right from under our noses. And nobody was even looking. These are terrible consequences. But nonetheless, if you look at what the original intent was and how we carried it through in dealing with World War II, we eventually won because we were more virtuous than not on an average for the whole country. We worked our butts off, and we won by creating not only better fighting people, but mostly because we created a material gap of such huge proportions that nobody could beat our war machine. We made more tanks, more airplanes, more boats and submarines and everything else than all the other people put together. And they had no hope, no hope of winning once we got into it. And we did it because the people, on any average, were more virtuous than the dark, evil ones were on the other side. But as much as we entertained evil and placated it, we paid dearly, and we still are today. The Soviet Union is Russia, but Russia still has many flavors of the Soviet Union. And we could have done much more 15, 20 years ago when the Soviet Union broke up. We could have done a much better job. We can't drop the ball. That was probably our last opportunity to really make a big change. And then in addition to that, we are now facing some of the most severe consequences. And we are really, really making mistakes now. The present government makes the Roosevelt administration look like staunch Federalists compared to what they were, which is mostly progressives. Today, we're progressives on steroids. What that means is that we're socialists. The government is mostly socialistic. Very serious problem if you're dealing with an arch rival who may become our arch enemy, who is an extreme tyrannical socialist government in China, and who is bolstered by partial socialism existing throughout Europe and especially the Soviet Union. So, whose side is God on? Well, I have to tell you, at this moment, God is not on the side of the United States. And they should take the words, "In God We Trust," off of all of our currency and all the flags and all of the places that it exists. Because the fact of the matter is that we have not been practicing what we need to practice in order to be on God's side. We are not creating virtue by ignoring people who are seeking freedom and fighting at the cost of their lives in Iran a year ago and just ignoring them and saying, "Oh, well, that's too bad." Is it? Should we really be having placating discussions with people who are killing others and destroying others? Remember what I said. God expects us to fight evil. If we're not willing to even recognize that evil exists, there's no way to fight it. And a certain type of socialism, which is being pretty much what we're seeing presently, has turned everything upside down and doesn't even believe there is such a thing as evil. And what it calls evil are people who want to be loving and free. I want you to consider these things because these are important elements to understanding where God is. Now, what is the outcome if God is not on your side in your country? You have a short life expectancy. How do we change it? We have to become more virtuous as a people. Remember, it's the average of all the people. So all of us need to do this, regardless of what the government's doing at the present time. You can do something about that in the voting box, in getting him politically involved. But in the meantime, creating virtue in a daily basis and becoming an enforcer of virtue and letting others know that that's where you stand and trying to get others to understand, then that's what life is about. That is a critical part of why we're here. And that's the thing that can put us on God's side, so that we are going to live in a world that isn't going to be some terrorizing, tyrannical, horrible place. We need to have truth as an element in all who we call our leaders. We should not elect people who don't tell the truth. If you hear a leader say one thing one day and another thing the next, and then 3 months later something else contradictory, and then on and on, don't ever consider supporting that leader, no matter what you thought of that person in the beginning. Don't dismiss the untruthfulness. It's a sign of much worse than what is there. When someone boldly lies to the public, they are lying much, much worse and more in other ways that are unknown. Okay. So if we're going to get God more on our side, then a practical and pragmatic way of thinking about this is to try to live your life more as a soul than just a person, personality. And souls live to be of service to others and to help others do the same. They don't want to just give to others because that isn't going to help them. They want to only give in ways that helps others to do the same, and that means wise giving. Some people call it love wisdom. So that's a critical element. God is attracted, we'll say, in its support to those who have love wisdom. If you don't have it, and if you don't even care to have it, you're going to be in a godless situation, which is going to be pretty bad, no matter what. What else and where else is God on the side of those who are living virtuously? Well, one of the key elements, if you've listened to earlier to the show, is education. When we don't concern ourselves with how we're educating our children and young adults even, and we allow the systems of poor education to eliminate the concepts of virtue and living a life that is exemplary of promoting godliness, even if it isn't about religion per se. If we don't insist upon this, then those people who are just the most, we'll say, sensitive to the whims of the selfishness and the materiality and greed, our children and younger people, will have no chance. In order to give them a chance, we have to make sure that they experience God in their education, not as a religion, Not even talking about God as God, necessarily. But talking about virtue and looking at heroes and looking in the past where people have done great virtuous things and looking where people haven't done it and not reinventing history to whitewash these things. Letting people know the truth about what we've done right and what we haven't done right so they have this balance. They have the ability to say, wait a second, I learned about stuff like this. Yeah, World War II, we didn't do so good sometimes, and sometimes we did great. Yeah, I know about that. These are important things, so to be considered. And the most mutable, the most dangerous, in terms of losing God, are the young. And it's up to us to make sure that they are not contaminated, they're not brainwashed, they're not given an opportunity to speak and to think and to argue and to discuss. We must make sure they have all of those parts in their education. Get involved. Make sure that if you have children or you know of children, of course, that they're going to a school or having education that gives them all these opportunities. And if they're not, do the same thing that I suggested earlier about religion. Get them out of there. Schools depend upon attendance. If there are no children attending, there's no more school. Put them in another kind of school, whatever is legal in the area that you operate within. And if you can't find any place legal in that area, then move to another state, another county, where you can have your children in a place where they can freely think, they can express themselves creatively, and they can find God. Even if God is not taught us any religion. I'm not suggesting that we send all of our children to some religious school. I'm suggesting we send them to a free thinking school where books aren't banned and the books that they've got have been stripped of truth and have a one way of looking at things based upon the agenda of the people who are writing and buying the books, the textbooks. These are the kinds of things that can be done. You can even have your kids listen to the show. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of an adult show, no kidding. But some children may get some of this. And that can help them to think as well. This is a show that provokes thought. Right? So the best methods, oftentimes, just is to not participate, to restrain, to leave those parts of society that are not functioning in a virtuous way and find alternatives. As you leave, make sure you take as many other people with you as possible. Not to be cruel or to punish, but to prevent this loss of our Creator from continuing, and to make sure we're on the side of God in the future. And you say, well, that's very, very judgmental. Yeah, it's judgmental. It's your judgment, mentally applied with great reasoning and truth and wisdom. That's what we're supposed to do. If you're not judgmental at all, then somebody else is going to be thinking for you. Now, I might don't want to use the word judgmental in the sense that it is prejudicial. But if you find that something is not in the light, don't just go softly into the night. Let others know. and explain why you believe so, and let them talk about it with you. We have to make some changes because we are on the wrong course, in my opinion. My opinion, God is not on our side. Doesn't mean God is necessarily against us. But there's a lot of forces building, where that statement may not be true in 5 or 10 years, if we keep going down the road we're on. Okay. So, where else is this an issue that we need to be addressing? Well, I can tell you this, that this whole concept touches every part of our society. The spiritual group I'm part of, is fighting some very strong levels of evil here in the state of Arizona. People who are amazingly corrupt and dishonest. They're crooks, but they're not just crooks because they decided that if they can't win one way, they'll do whatever it takes, including buying a judge or two, making sure that this property is destroyed, people's lives are threatened, whatever it takes to get what they want. Now, the real issues here become one, then, of the structure of the society. Is society itself corrupt enough to allow this sort of thing to take place? I mean, after all, judges are pretty important, and especially if they're pretty high-up kind of judges. That's really serious because they have almost infinite power. There's things in our laws that prevent them from, that gives them almost absolute immunity from everything. There's a reason for that, because if a judge could be sued for whatever they do, even if it's really bad, then how could they ever come to reasonable decisions, because they would be constantly concerned about it. So they're given this immunity, but unfortunately, if they want to make a lot of money, have a lot of money available for their re-elections and whatever else, they may choose to become corrupt. How do you deal with corruption on those kinds of scales? Well, with great difficulty, to say the least. The answer, unlike in the other situations, is not to leave. Because there's no place to leave when it reaches that kind of place. You've got to use as much as you can in the legal system to fight these things, even though there's no necessary benefit on a personal level to do so. But the exposure of any kind of corruption and evil is what ultimately destroys it. Evil does not like to be shown. He wants people to believe that it doesn't exist, so obviously, if you show a lot of light on it, that's not going to make it happy. So, giving a lot of attention and public awareness to circumstances of corruption and destruction of society is an important part of the process of fighting evil and of creating virtue. Remember, God's not going to fight against them necessarily. And those that can see the evil, which may be rare, and those who have the capabilities to fight evil, which is even maybe more rare on a relatively small-numbered person scale, they may be in great jeopardy, but they have ultimately the right, they're doing the right thing. They're pursuing the right elements. Now, they may have made some mistakes that had brought the evil upon them. Undoubtedly, that's true. This happens sometimes in spiritual groups, I'm mentioning our group, has had these circumstances. But nonetheless, in the long run, fighting incessantly the evil is sometimes the only alternative, regardless of the outcome. And it's another one of these difficult to understand issues, because people who are quite capable of fighting may be the ones who least want to do any fighting, but they may be the ones demanded upon to do the fighting because they're capable, and anyone else would just be crushed. If you're in that situation, you're in for a tough ride. And you may not survive it in a physical sense of life. But, you know, you go on and live in the next world, the astral world, where things are a bit different. I'm going to cover that if I can, if I have time. But here, you've got to fight if you're really capable. So few people are that that's the reason you don't see it happening very often. But those who are must. And if you want to assist those who are, you can. I've said this numerous times. If you want to be of some service to what we are doing, you can call us, email us. We're available and talk about it. At any rate, so this is an important element. Now, does that mean that eventually God will be on our side because we're on God's side? Well, eventually, yes. But at that particular point, it will be those who had the valor and the bravery and the maybe heroics to fight when there seemingly was no help coming from greater sources. We'll call it God collective. And there may be karmic factors here. I don't want to ignore that. But there still is this, regardless of the situation, regardless of the past, you've got to do what needs to be done if you're capable of doing so. The capability usually starts with the ability to see clearly the evil. Most people cannot see evil because they don't want to. It frightens them too much. So they don't. They don't see it. Now, as far as things other than evil, that still involves the things that are wrong with our social structure. If they're less than evil, it's much easier, because then you can get together with larger groups of people who more readily see what's wrong. And you can work with these larger groups of people to do something about it. And I strongly suggest that as an alternative in those situations. Won't work with abject evil. It won't work with that because nobody will see it. But in the less evil or non-evil situations where there's just maybe some criminality, some darkness, but it isn't truly evil, then there's a greater level of success for groups of people to say, let's change this about our society. It isn't working. Let's do something now to make it a more virtuous society to live in. That's a great thing. It's a good thing to do. And it really can be of great help. Okay, I want to mention about the astral world, just to give you some understanding of the differences in physics. Just as you have to fight evil in the physical world, because if you don't, because of inertia and the density of energy, evil will destroy things. Not true in the astral world. In the astral world, all you need to do is to keep evil confined in a dark place where it chooses to be, and make sure that it doesn't get out, so to speak, and it destroys itself under those bases. of physics changes. It has to do with the density of energy being much less, therefore the ability to destroy things and people, etc., is much reduced by using bombs, bullets, or whatever. And the effects of something called the quantum constant have grown so large that energy follows thought at a very high rate. And as long as people can even think, they don't have to have great physical resources to be obstinately fighting against evil that tries to get them. All they got to do is put up a barrier of energy. Evil can't get even close, and the evil ends up, again, of its own choosing, to hide out in this very dark area of the astral world called the eighth sphere. When that takes place, it just destroys itself because it needs to feed on something. And if it can't feed on those people who are dark but not yet evil, then it feeds on itself and destroys itself. Doesn't work in the physical world that way, but it works great in the astral world. So when we leave this world and we go on to live in the astral world, we can look forward to being less affected by evil and less affected even by selfish people if we live in higher parts of the astral world where the selfish people aren't as present. They just their consciousness prevents them from even visiting those places. So life becomes truly more virtuous, and God is more prevalent. God is definitely much more on the side of the people who live in the higher regions of the astral world. And those people are on God's side. So in those situations, we can say that there's a considerable difference in the experience of life in the astral world compared to the physical world. Now, if you live in the lowest parts of the astral world, it isn't quite as dramatically improved. It's still sometimes better than in the physical world, but not necessarily better than the best parts of the physical world. So if you average it out, you get one answer, but if you're looking for extremes, a different answer comes. Okay, so with that in mind, we should not fear dying from this world and going on to the astral world. But what we should be concerned about is how we leave this world. Because if we haven't done the best we can do, that stays with us for our next physical lifetime. And we'll have somewhat a different personality, but we're still part of our soul, and we're going to come back having to face a lot of similar issues. So it's so much better to create with our Creator, co-create with our Creator here and now, even though it is so much more difficult in the physical world in comparison to the astral. There is of great benefit, because this is where God is having the hardest time of expressing itself. And this is where souls are sending the foot soldiers, us human beings, to try to do something about it. We are the true, true foot soldiers. We're the pilgrims coming to bring something new, an enlightenment to all of the physical world. That was our intention. I know some of us are not doing that, and we're screwing things up royally, but that was the original intention. Think about that and keep that inside yourself as you live through the day. Say to yourself, I'm here to be creative of virtue. I'm not here to buy more things, to have more of this or that. I'm not here to have control or power over others. I'm not here to be the boss. I'm not here to be a special person. I'm not here to get fame or fortune. I'm here to co-create with my Creator and with others, and to help others do the same. That's what I'm here for. With that perspective, guaranteed, you're walking right on the God side. That's what God wants. And as capable as you are of doing so, do it. Don't excuse yourself because, gee, well, I'm great and I can do it twice as good as everybody else. I only have to do it half as much because the other half I can do something else and just play around. No. Recognize the gifts that you have and your capabilities is also being a responsibility and an obligation. And see everything that you can do to make an improvement, an obligation to do so, and you will bring God into your life, and God will be on your side, the middle one. Do the best you can in all ways, that's called nobility, at all times, and you will have a remarkably meaningful life. Remarkable. Try it for a month. And see what happens. You'll be just amazed at how much your life can change. And there are some special cases, and I don't have time to get into everything about this, but I just mentioned some people who are fairly far along in this process that we're talking about may actually take on the karma of others as a special kind of teacher. And in those situations, they may suffer the consequences of their students and the behaviors and actions of others, their students. And even those that may not be their students, but those that they are helping in some way or another. That's a different thing. That's not somebody who is trying to punish themselves. It's someone who has taken on a greater responsibility and even for themselves. And if you're one of those people, I commend you, I hold great honor for you, but I don't need to be telling you about this because you already know it. I'm just mentioning it at the end of the show for the people out there who may not know that there's such people exist, and they do, but they're rare. And if you meet one or if you're having anything to do with someone like that, have respect for them, and also try to be a service to them because they're serving you and they're serving many other people. It's a great thing. Well, we are out of time. So I hope that this has given you, and it was an overview. I realize I didn't go as far in depth as I might have liked, but of the idea of whose side is God on? And hopefully that question is now answered. And you can share this with others and have them also go on and listen to this show at some other time. Well, we're out of time for right now. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is. Thank you.